Welcome to PD's Power Hour. I'm your host, Michelle, also known as PD. And in this episode, we are going back to my roots, to the wine. I'd actually got an itch to do champagne because champagne is probably one of my most favorite subjects in all of alcohol. Something about it is just so special to me. The bubbles, the fanciness of it. I don't know. Something I love. Absolutely love champagne. And I looked at my wine fridge and lo and behold, I'm running low on champagne. So I was like, oh my God, I got to do a podcast episode because I need to restock. It's really the method to that madness. But I also was itching to talk about champagne, specifically with my fabulous guest today, Pam from Cannot Be Tamed. I mean, I'm doing a wine episode and of course I have to have Pam on because she's my wine girl. As I've said before, I feel like anytime I talk about wine, I need to have Pam on because she's so enthusiastic. She has such great questions. She's such a joy to talk to about these things. And she's just a total badass. So why wouldn't I want to have her on this episode, on this podcast? So thanks to Pam for joining me today and indulging in some champagne. She is also a champagne enthusiast as well. I had given her a couple bottles in the past and I just like to share. So so she was really excited and I was really excited to be here. And you can maybe tell our excitement in the episode. But let's get to it, though, because we have so much to talk about. So let's pop open this bottle of champagne with Pam from Cannot Be Tamed. Enjoy. Welcome, Pam, back again to PD's Power Hour. You are officially the guest I've had on the most on this podcast. Congratulations.
Yay! Thank you for having me back on again. I'm so excited to chat with you and drink with you. And yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to put that on my profile. Most returning guest.
Well, that'll make me blush. Well, I had to have you for this one because I don't know why. I was just like, I was itching. I was in a mood. I was like, oh my God, I really want to do champagne. And I was like, well, I have to do it with Pam because I know she loves champagne too. And so excuses for me to come back and chat with you. So yay, champagne. How do you feel about Shane? About Shane. Some random guy named Shane. Champagne.
I love champagne. I mean, I very rarely drink actual champagne, but any kind of bubbly Prosecco or Cava, like bubbles make everything better when it comes to wine, particularly. I've been drinking some rosé champagne and love it. Would drink it all the time if I could afford it and not die.
Well, that too. I mean, champagne is exceedingly expensive compared to Prosecco and Cava, unfortunately, because it is. I mean, we'll get into it a little bit, I guess. But I, too, love champagne. This is probably my favorite subject in wine. Ooh, is bubbles.
Nice.
Specifically champagne. I'm typically not a huge fan of Cava. Some Prosecco is okay, but when it comes to the champagne method and actual champagne, that is my jam, and I will drink all of it all day. But I love you've been drinking rosé champagne. Is that influence of me from our rosé episode, right?
Yes. Also, you sent me a bottle of rosé champagne as a housewarming. So there was that one.
Oh, I did.
And then, yeah, my mom got one for me. That was the one that the cork just like flew out of the bottle unprompted. And a friend brought another bottle of sparkling rosé. So yeah, I've been having a bit of that and enjoying it.
That's good. I love it. If I love rosé champagne probably more than I just love regular champagne. So yay, drink it. It's so fun and pink and fruity. How much do you know about champagne?
A little bit, like where it comes from, and I've learned some stuff about sort of what grapes are involved, but not overly much about it.
Well, get strap on your seatbelts, ladies, because it's going to be a bumpy ride.
All right.
Let's get started. Give me a fun fact about names.
All right.
A name. What's in a name?
So I wasn't sure where to go with this one. There's so many. It's such a broad category. So I went to babycenter.com, apparently the biggest parenting website, and found out in 2021, the most popular baby names are, for girls, Olivia, Emma, and Amelia, and for boys, Liam, Noah, and Oliver. Don't those names all sound like British names? I'm pretty sure this is an American site, but they all sound British.
I do, especially like Amelia. Like, isn't that the Game of Thrones, Amelia Clark or something like that? Like,
I think
they're all
so,
British,
yeah.
Aren't they? Yeah, that feels very British. Suspicious. Here I am drinking and you haven't even poured
it. I know.
It's not bad. Bad
name. I try to save it for the tasting, but it takes so long to get to the tasting, so.
we drink during. It's fine. I'm already feel like I need to top off, because I also feel like a flute, as beautiful as flute glasses are, as you should drink in a champagne. I'm like, that's it?
Yeah.
Like, you just keep refilling, you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Give me another fun fact.
So, I looked up the meaning of our names. So, Pamela is of English origin, and it means all honey or sweetness, which I'm not sure if that really applies to me. But Michelle is of French origin, and it means who is like God. So,
oh yeah,
feel free to let that contribute to your ego if you'd like to. And then I also looked up Petey, and they didn't have Petey with two E's, only Petey with a Y. But it is a Greek name, and it means rock.
I didn't even think of that to be like an actual name. Like, I don't know. Like, and somebody's actual first name is Petey out there. I mean, good for you, man, woman, child. Well, that's
yeah.
Fun.
Our names have plummeted in popularity. Mine especially.
Oh.
Mine is like the 900th most popular name. Yours is like around 350 or something.
Oh no, that's sad. I remember my mom telling me a story. I was like, Mom, why'd you name me Michelle? And she's like, well, I was trying to think of a good name, and the nurse was like Michelle. And I was like, oh, that's pretty. I'm like, okay.
So the nurse named you.
The nurse named me, pretty much. Great. Well, that's a shame. Oh, I think our names are lovely, Pam.
I agree.
Sweet and honeyed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love honey.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And you're a sweet, you are a sweet woman. But
sometimes
sweet. I think we all are. We're all a little sassy. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you about names as the origin of champagne. Mm-hmm. So champagne comes from champagne, and it can only be called champagne if it's from champagne. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this before?
Yes.
Yeah. So pretty much how this originated, champagne got really, like, protective of their shit. Mm-hmm. And the Madrid system, under the 1891 treaty, reserved the right of sparkling wine produced within the region to be called champagne. Mm-hmm. And that was really, like, knocked down after World War II with the Treaty of Versailles. Mm-hmm. And then there's this governing board in Champagne called the Comité Improfessionnel du Vin de Champagne, mm-hmm. which regulates all sorts of bureaucratic bullshit. And they work with a bunch of different countries, like around 70 in total, in order for them to say, hey, don't be using our name. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. Only we can do that.
Okay.
So that's why champagne only comes from champagne. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't use the same methods to make wine in the champagne method.
Right.
Like, for example, in the U.S., if you make a sparkling wine and you put, like, method traditionnel or method champenois, I think one of those, like, got expired. Like, they got rid of the method champenois. They use method traditionnel now. Mm-hmm. That's made in the champagne method.
Okay.
But it's not champagne because mm-hmm. we're so bougie. But I think it's funny because so many people really confuse sparkling wine. Like, they just call sparkling wine champagne.
Right.
When it's not, I mean, even like, I feel like some Proseccos and such, I'm like, like, I get like, no, that's not true. Mm-hmm. It's legally not true. Now, there is like one producer in California that, so before 2006, if you're using the name champagne on your bottle, you could still keep it as long as it associated with something of the actual wine's origin.
Right.
So there's this wine in California. It's called California Champagne.
Right.
That's it.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, is that, like, the name for sparkling wine? I know, like, Spain is Cava, Italy is Prosecco. Do other countries also have their own name for it? And do you know if those are controlled? Like, could I call Prosecco something I make here?
I mean, you could start up a band, I'm sure.
I mean wine.
I mean, that's what I meant. Like, you start up your wine company and just call it your own thing and start up a law to call it that, sure. But Cava's still made in the champagne method, and it's in, like, a, what's it, like, DOC or whatever it's called in Spain. Like, it's a legal designation within that region you have that is sparkling. It's Cava. Cava is from Spain. Mm-hmm. Prosecco has to come from a particular area in Italy. Mm-hmm. So each of those do have their own area of, it's called, like, an AOC, like, appellation of control. So within that, those regions, you have to call it these things.
Okay.
Off top of head, those are the only three I can think of. I'm probably missing. I mean, there's lots of regions that make champagne, make sparkling wine.
Right.
Even in France. But those are the only two that I think of that have that legal, like, they're from there. They're made in that method. They're called that. You know what I mean?
Okay. I have more questions.
Yeah. Hit me.
So other champagne names or words, at least, like, on the bottle are cuvée and brut. Are those... What do those mean?
So cuvée just means blend, like wine, okay, whatever. Cuvée, whatever. Cuvée is not really super legal, but brut. So there are different levels of sweetness when it comes to wine, especially champagne. So it goes from extra brut, brut, extra dry, which, let's be confusing here. Dry is sweeter than brut. Mm-hmm. Stupid. Sec, demi-sec, and do.
Okay.
So it goes from driest to sweetest. So when it says brut, that's the second driest. It's still very dry, granted.
Okay.
But it's the second driest. So there's actual legal designation for those.
Okay. Interesting.
Our bottle. I didn't even, like, tell us what we're drinking today. We are drinking Champagne Bollinger Special Cuvée. This is a brut. So this is the second driest. And this is a champagne. They mostly make it out of Chardonnay. And there are 7 great varietals that you can grow in champagne and use in wine. A lot of times they don't tell you exactly what is in the wine unless it says something like Blanc de Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's all Chardonnay.
Oh.
Or Blanc de Noir. That means it's it can be a blend or just of the 2 black grape varietals, so Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones you, like, rarely see.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So give me a fun fact about bubbles.
All right. I think these are my funnest facts.
Yay.
So a snapping shrimp, also known as a pistol shrimp, uses bubbles to catch their prey. They have one disproportionately large claw, and it snaps shut, and it vaporizes the water as it does so, making it super hot, and then it emits a very powerful cavitation bubble that can stun and even kill fish in front of it.
Oh my god!
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like something out of a video game. What video game am I thinking of where you make a bubble and you catch things in it and then pop the bubble? It's like every video game, but...
Oh, Bubble Bobble?
Yeah, Bubble Bobble!
or in the NES Little Mermaid, I think she makes bubbles with her tail and she smacks them at enemies.
Yes! So this is video game imitating life. Mm-hmm. This thing actually exists that, like, snaps and makes a bubble and vaporizes? Jesus! Yeah.
Like, it superheats the water. And, yeah, it vaporizes it. And then just, like, this little, like, rush of bubble goes forward. Apparently it can also break glass. Like, it's strong.
Oh my god, I want to YouTube that later. Mm-hmm.
I watched a video on it. A man with a very nice British accent.
It's amazing. Are they big?
No, they're not very big, I don't think. I mean, they're shrimp, so they're not... I don't think they're that big. I'm not sure what kind of camera they were using to make them like look bigger or smaller, but yeah. Mm. I thought that was
very cool. That is really cool. Mm-hmm. Vaporizes. Oh my God. Give me another fun fact.
So if you look up fun facts about bubbles, they're almost all mm-hmm. about soap bubbles. And I'm like, no, there's no soap in my drink. Those are irrelevant to our conversation. So I found a study from 2013. People often assume that the bite given by carbonation in drinks is due to the tactile stimulation of like bubbles on your actual tongue and in your mouth. But this study put people in a hyperbaric chamber with enough atmospheric pressure that bubbles could not form. So they had these carbonated drinks, but the bubbles couldn't form when you open them up. And the study uh-huh. found that even though there were no bubbles, the people drinking it still reported feeling like the bite from carbonation. So the study concluded that it's caused more by the carbonic acid than the actual bubbles themselves.
So it's bubbles are an illusion.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So the bubbles, interesting. I'm trying to imagine what that would, I mean, I guess, would it just be like flat, but that they stay, they still taste the bite of mm-hmm. it. That's cool.
Although I feel that like, if you take a sip and you just leave it in your mouth, like you can almost like hear the bubbles. I bet they couldn't hear the bubbles.
Mm-hmm. It's like Pop Rocks.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's cool. Do you know how bubbles are made in champagne?
No, not really. I assume carbonic acid, but maybe not.
Yeah, pretty much. Kind of, yeah. Yeah. So champagne versus Prosecco. Like they're both bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
Both are made in not completely different methods, but they're both are made of very different methods. So champagne is made in secondary fermentation in bottle. So what that means is it's a lot longer and it's a lot more expensive, which is also adherence to the price.
Right.
So what they do is they press the wine. Mm-hmm. It goes into fermentation into large, big old vats.
Mm-hmm.
Then they move the wine once it's sat there for a little bit. And it's like a couple weeks, couple days, whatever. What do they want to do? Mm-hmm. Move the bottles and move the juice into bottles. Add some wine yeast in there, some sugar. And the sugar is not meant to like sweeten it. It's meant to feed the yeast that they're also adding into the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Cap a crown cap on that bad boy. And then you let it hang out for months.
Okay.
And what that's doing is the yeast is eating the sugar. And the eating of sugar causes carbon dioxide, which is causing bubbles.
Okay.
So it sits there, makes the bubbles. And you're also going through this process as well because the yeast adds a sediment in the wine.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't tip over my bottle of wine, yeah. But as it's aging it, what they're doing slowly is they rotate it and putting it almost so it's vertical.
Right.
Very slowly. I mean, like within a couple months.
Okay.
And what that does, it makes the yeast go into the top of the, near the cap. And then whenever they're ready, they take it and they disgorge it. So they freeze the top half and then they go poof and remove the cap and all that yeast goes poo into the air.
Oh.
And it leaves it. And then that's when you add your, like, it's called your dosage. So when we get into that brut, extra brut, dry, sec, that's when you're adding sweetness into the wine.
Okay.
And then you pop a cork in it and then you call it a day. Then you're done.
Nice.
So versus Prosecco. So what Prosecco is doing is after they do fermentation in these big tanks,
mm-hmm.
they move the juice into big old tanks and then add carbon dioxide to it. So then you're adding the bubbles or yeast and letting that bubble that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the bubbles are less, when you're drinking Prosecco next to champagne, the bubbles are less fine
mm-hmm.
because the surface area for the wine to build those bubbles is much larger.
Right.
Which creates a bigger bubble.
Okay. Interesting. Do the bubbles have any impact on like aging in terms of cellaring your wine? I would guess not, because you can cellar champagne for pretty long.
Yeah, you can cellar for pretty, well, a lot of time, you can cellar champagne for a long time. Most champagne winemakers prefer if you just drink it within the next couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, when they release it, that's when you should drink it, because they've already aged it for you.
Right.
because they go through a really extensive aging process when it, especially when it's going through secondary fermentation bottle. Mm-hmm. They have to, in champagne, have to age it on the lees, so on the yeast thingies, for like 3 years.
Okay.
So this wine's already like stupid old.
Right.
The bubbles don't necessarily dissipate. Mm-hmm. The wine flavors do. Like, you almost get those secondary tertiary notes, which means, like, apricot or, like, dried fruit.
Right.
Kind of feel the older it gets, but the bubbles won't dissipate quickly.
Okay. Yeah, like, I had that bottle of Dom, which I probably saved for a little bit too long, and I could definitely taste it. Like, it was still good, but it was, like, you should have drank this a couple years ago.
Which is fine. Yeah. Yeah. There's a bottle of champagne I have downstairs. It's from my favorite producer of all time. It's called Rose Dijon.
Mm-hmm.
And I should drink it. But I'm like, it's my last one. You know, I'm like hanging on to dear life for it. Like, I don't want to. It's just like, it's so beautiful. Maybe we'll drink it in January.
Yeah. That's the problem. You save the good bottles for like a special occasion. And then it's just like, well, now I could have drank this. I could have lit some candles and played a video game and drank this. Like, every day can be a special when you open a bottle of champagne.
Exactly. That is the special occasion, mm-hmm. when you open that bottle. And I find it the best time whenever you, especially when you're playing video games with it. I don't know why champagne and video games is the best. Okay, so I'm pouring myself more, and then I'm going to tell you a fun secret about this label.
I'm also going to pour.
So, do you see on your bottle, right above Brut, mm-hmm. there's tiny ass numbers that are kind of going vertical. Tiny ass. Yep.
I do.
So it should say NM,
mm-hmm.
and then some number next to it. What does your number say? At least the first three.
121.
121. Okay. So that actually has a lot of meaning to it.
Okay.
Those tiny ass numbers. So the NM specifically means that is a négociant wine. Mm-hmm. So champagne is really big into being négociants,
mm-hmm.
and then there are grower champagnes, which are sort of the bougie, it gets more bougie as it goes, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like, it's, you know. So the big boys, Moët, Bollinger is a big boy, Dom Perignon, Veuve Clicquot, mm-hmm. other big boys, they're mostly all négociants. And what that pretty much means is that they are companies that do not actually own vineyards. They may own some, but they purchase a lot of their grapes in order to produce these wines.
Oh.
And now they have long-standing contracts with a lot of these, like, mm-hmm. Farmers in order to do this, but that's what that means, that this is not a grower champagne, this is somebody who buys stuff from other people.
Interesting. So interesting. I would think there would be a sort of thing about like growing your own wine, like I would feel like that would be more prestigious than doing it that way, although I guess that would give you the chance then to like pick the best grapes. Like, well, if you grow your own, it's like either these are good and you use them or they're not and you don't. Whereas I guess you can pick and choose otherwise.
Exactly. It also creates a sense of consistency,
mm-hmm.
especially with champagne, because most of the time these are non-vintage. And what they are is they're blends of many different years in order to get that house style.
Mm-hmm.
So when you open a bottle of Bollinger or you open a bottle of Veuve Clicquot, you know exactly what you're going to get since it is the house blend.
Right.
You know what I mean?
As opposed to Dom, where it's always a vintage.
Yes. Okay. Dom is always a vintage. And did you know Dom is actually owned by Moët now?
I read that. Yes.
I was like, oh, really?
Yeah.
I was surprised. But in order to tell if it's a grower champagne, you look for those tiny ass letters on the label. And if it says RM,
mm-hmm.
that means it's a grower champagne. So that means the winemaker grew his own grapes off his 2 little hectare farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. There's other like things like cooperative and other stuff, but those are the two big ones, NM and RM. Now, the numbers, though, tell you when the wine was disgorged.
Okay.
So when I was very quickly going through the process, and at the very end, after they take off that crown cap and they cork it,
mm-hmm.
that's when you disgorge it. You remove the crown cap, add the cork.
Right.
So what you want, essentially, in a champagne is recently disgorged. Like, you hear douchey wine people like me call it RD.
Okay.
And so the date is 1/21. So January of this past year, 2021, is when it was disgorged.
Okay.
And you can also tell, especially when you look at your cork after you've opened it, if it's like poofy.
It's very poofy.
Like it's very poofy. Mm-hmm. That's how you also know it's been recently disgorged as well. Like if this was disgorged if we sat on this for a couple years, like when you had your dom, it was probably a shriveled up little
dude.
It
was a shriveled up little dude. Yeah.
It was. And that's because that's just the nature of the cork being, you know, hanging out with the wine for a couple years. So
interesting.
Yeah. That's how you want freshness and squish poofy.
So the one I had that just like flew off, had that been in the bottle for a long time then?
Maybe not. Maybe the cork hadn't been on there for a long time. Or maybe it as well, what could have happened, fermentation sometimes doesn't go complete.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can have pop-off corks. Like when I worked at a wine shop, a cork may fly off because fermentation didn't technically end. Like maybe you didn't get all the yeast out of there, so it just kept going.
Oh, okay.
And created more pressure in there and just was like, ha! But yeah, I'm throwing so many, like, facts.
That's a lot of facts.
So true. Many facts. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I'm glad to learn. And if I forget them, I can just listen to the podcast, so.
Exactly. This is all this is. This is just, it's a repository for me to, like, remember what the hell is going on up in this brain. Because all this stuff goes up in here. But give me a fun fact about our good friend Dom Perignon.
All right. So I went the sort of more entertainment route for this, but Dom Perignon makes an appearance in the novel Moonraker by Ian Fleming. Also, two Bond films, 007 alludes to his preference for the 1953 vintage in the films Dr. No and Goldfinger. And in Dr. No, he also uses a bottle of 1955 as a weapon.
Why are you use that as a weapon? Yeah, I know. Oh my god.
I mean, if it's an empty bottle, okay, go for it. But
yeah. Not full. Come on, man. would you say Dom Perignon is like, out of all the champagnes you've had, do you think that's the most memorable? Or how do you feel about it? Was it great? Did you just meh? Too old? You should open it earlier?
So I really liked it. So the bottle I had, I think it was like a 1994 vintage. My mom and I have the same birthday, so my stepdad at the time got us both a bottle. So we drank her bottle like years before. So it was like really, really good. So yeah, that was definitely a memorable one. But yeah, I think it was very, very good.
do you remember your favorite? Like, can you say, like, oh my god, that was like the best bottle of champagne I've ever had? It's okay to say no because it's hard to remember.
I don't remember. No.
You mean that bottle of I get
the rosé one was really good. Yeah.
Have you ever heard that Dom Perignon created champagne?
Mm-hmm.
That myth.
I have heard that. The monk. Yeah,
it's not really true.
Oh no.
So Dom Perignon was an actual dude.
Mm-hmm.
He was a monk. Help me if I remember what kind of monk, but you know, one of those monks that hang out in
monasteries.
Yes. Yeah. Like, why can't I think of the word it's called? But contrary to belief, he did not invent sparkling wine.
Okay.
Sparkling wine was actually, so Dom Perignon lived from like 1650s until early 1700s, like 1710, I think, is when he died.
Okay.
The first record of sparkling wine was actually not even in Champagne. It was in Blanquette de Limoux, which is a beautiful region for sparkling wine, still made in the Champagne method, just in southwest France. And so what really happened was that Dom Perignon was really ahead of his time, and he introduced a lot of processes and recorded methods of making sparkling wine that are like still prominent use today, or still like very well known today.
Mm-hmm.
He actually hated sparkling wine. He preferred making red wine.
Okay.
Because there was less chance to for the bubbles to actually happen. Mm-hmm. Because what happened in back in the day, as your bottle did, exploded out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Making sparkling wines is super dangerous. Bottles would be exploding because of the secondary fermentation would just happen in the bottles. And they would explode because the glass wasn't glass as it is today. And it wouldn't be able to hold the pressure.
Okay.
So you'd have explosions of bottles in the cellars killing people.
Oh, no.
So it really wasn't until, like, the early 1700s, whenever glass making got better,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to create a stronger bottle to hold the wine. Again, not as great as today, mm-hmm. by any stretch of the imagination, but it was better. And so Dom Perignon was like, okay, I'm going to write all this stuff down. I'm going to do, like, especially with the winemaking, he was, like, really proponent on low yields, severe pruning, careful mm-hmm. harvesting, that kind of stuff, which is still used in Champagne today. Like, all Champagne has to be hand harvested. There's no machine harvesting at all in Champagne. It's stupid illegal.
Oh, okay.
So that's very labor intensive. You know what I mean?
Right. Do you think it actually makes a difference?
It can. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things, you know, like, I mean, it's like, yes, because you're using, you're delicately removing grapes from the vines. Mm-hmm. I mean, delicately, when I say snipping off and throwing it into a bin.
Yeah.
Versus a machine that's chunking out these things.
Right.
It also, it creates a different level when you're planting the vines. Mm-hmm. If you're planting for a machine, you have to have them wider. So there's less density in the plot. Because a machine should be able to go through it versus one that is hand harvested. So that also has an effect on how much wine you're creating, as well as like how far apart. Because in Champagne, they are super, like, if you aren't perfect, you are getting kicked to the curb in the initial stages. So, oh yeah. But yes, Champagne was not created by Dom Perignon. You heard it here first, kids.
All right.
What about the flute? Have you ever seen, like, people drink champagne out of, like, a coupe glass? You know, those big Marie Antoinette things?
Yeah. It's, actually, my next fact has a weird glass in it. But, yeah, I
Ooh, tell me.
Okay. So, I mean, somewhat related to the fact. But, so, Lenny Kravitz joined the Dom Perignon brand as global director and photographer in 2018. He's created a limited edition bottle, a box that doubles as a candle holder, and a champagne table. Lady Gaga has also since collaborated with a limited edition bottle design. But when I went to the site to look this up, Lenny was drinking out of not a flute. Like, it looked like it wasn't a big glass. Like, it had a wide bottom, and then it sort of, like, tapered up at the top. And I was like, I've never seen someone drink champagne from that, unless he's not drinking champagne, but then why would this be on the Dom Perignon website?
Interesting choice of glass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there for a long time, they call it the Marie Antoinette glass, so it's a very big bowl
mm-hmm.
that didn't taper up to the top. It just sort of sat like a big saucer bowl. It's because I don't know why it was popular. In reality, it doesn't make sense because the glasses of champagne are formed in this super skinny way for a purpose
mm-hmm.
so that the bubbles are a little bit more concentrated and they don't dissipate as quickly. When you have a larger surface area like that, the bubbles are going to dissipate quicker. And I mean, you know, you got to let it sit in your glass for a long time.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be like us and drink it immediately. But they do. It's not as a concentrated bubble. And I feel like the only time I'll really be nitpicky when it comes to drinking wine from particular glasses will only be champagne for that sole purpose.
Right. Yeah, I remember my mom saying something. So, yeah, the coupe glass is like, mm-hmm. it's almost like a cocktail glass, but a little rounder and shallow.
Because mm-hmm.
apparently there was a saying that the perfect boob would fit in a champagne glass, and then it's just like,
you look at this, like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
I think that's why That was like one of the myths or whatever, is like for the coupe, because it was really popular to drink it out of that during Marie Antoinette.
Mm-hmm.
And the myth is that she could fit the coupe over her boob type of thing. You know, that's why kind of stuff. Hilarious. Freaking hilarious. Of how women's boobs are integrated into champagne.
Mm-hmm. What's the most expensive champagne? I feel like a lot of champagne prestige kind of goes with rappers. I remember like at one time it was like Dom P was like the big one, and then they moved on to Cristal and
yeah, it was like Jay-Z or no, who does the beats? Some big rapper.
Dre,
that's what it was. He does a Cristal thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're stupid expensive. I think the most expensive one ever sold, maybe not ever sold, but I did see, like, there was a couple vintages of Dom, the Rosé Dom specifically, went for, like, close to $1 million
once
at some Hong Kong auction. Yeah. It's interesting. Dom doesn't release a wine every year as well. Mm-hmm. The vintage, because they only release vintages ones, as you said. It has to be a good vintage for them to release it. So it's not like there's one for every single year. It's like once every couple years.
Right.
Which makes it also more expensive. But yeah, let's taste this bad boy. I've got to
fill this glass.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get a good nose on it and it's not far away.
And it's not like a tiny bit at the very bottom. So let's look at this color. Golden.
It's quite golden. Like, I've definitely seen much paler ones, but this is quite golden.
So fun fact about Bollinger, which makes it sort of this golden color as well. Bollinger is one of the very few houses that actually ferments the wine in barrel before they go into bottle.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of places just use, like, large stainless steel vats in order to age it before they go in the bottle. Bollinger's classic old school where they're still using wood. And that wood can also be very, you can tell that a little bit in the color just by the goldenness of it. Mm-hmm. Because wood will make a wine a little bit more golden.
Right. Interesting.
Fun. How's those bubbles look?
They're very fine.
Mine's dancing.
Mine's dancing too. Like, my first pour, the bubbles weren't going as much, but now they're definitely going. Very few of them are actually sticking around, like sticking to the sides. They're a bit at the top, but yeah, like tons of bubble activity generally, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it is happening there. It's a party up in this joint.
Mm-hmm.
So many bubbles, beautiful. Let's give it a good nose.
I often find it difficult to smell much.
Mm-hmm.
With sparkling.
Yeah, and almost like the bubbles also adhere to, like, less notes you can get on the nose, because it's almost like maybe that carbon dioxide punching you, like, exploding up at the top of the surface, just being like, pa!
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't smell a ton.
So, based on the nose here, I can definitely get that woodiness from it. Like, it almost smells like a golden apple versus green apple or something like that. Almost like a little bit more...
Yeah, I can.
Aged apple.
Get that. Or maybe even, like, pear?
Definitely pear.
I get it more the more. I just have to, like, breathe it a lot, yeah.
You gotta think about it. You gotta sit there.
Oh, my nose touched it.
Filled it to the top.
Now it's in my nose, yeah. Oh, now I can smell. Yeah, oh, now I definitely get the apple.
Why don't you dink your, just dunk your
just
nose
dunk in, your face in it, and you'll get the full experience.
Yeah. Apple, pear. I want to say, like, I feel like goldenberry, if you've ever had those before. They're like these yellow berries. They're very, they're around a lot in Pennsylvania, in Virginia. They're not sweet, but they kind of have that kind of tartness to them that I get.
Oh, do they
nose.
Look like gooseberries? But they're like...
Yes, like gooseberries. Okay. It's taste.
It's quite acidic, like very fresh, very dry. I'm getting like a bit like yeasty, breadiness to it.
Definitely. Bread and yeast is a very common component in champagne, especially if you have like one that's called Paul Roger.
Mm-hmm.
they really like to add the bready. The bread smells like a bread maker. It tastes like bread. Yes, I get a bit of the wood in there. Still that kind of golden appleness to it. Not a lot of fruit, though. Very much a more tart, very acidic. But I like acid in champagne, so I ain't mad. Mm-hmm. Yeast. Lots of yeast as well. How do you feel about it?
It's good. I like the sort of the brightness that the acidity makes. I also find it's very bubbly. Like if I just sit with it, my tongue is just dancing with the bubbles.
This is fresco. Mm-hmm. And honestly, this is the way I like to drink champagne, when it's this like in your face bubbly, you know, like so bright and refreshing. This isn't my favorite kind because I'm not a fan of the yeast-driven champagnes. I'm more of a fan of ones that have a little bit more fruit to them, a little bit more fruit-forward. Again, that's just my own personal jam.
Yeah, I like this. I like the brightness of it. I kind of like things that are like just a little more mellow. Mm-hmm. Like this is very
in your face,
intense. Yeah,
for sure, 1000%. That also could be. As well, like, you know, this is of their house style. It is quite acidic. Like, I feel like it needs a little bit more fruit to balance that acidity to it, and I'm an acid head.
Yeah.
But it, I mean, it's champagne, so it's still wonderful. But
exactly.
But again, not my favorite kind that I've ever had. That's to be sure. How much do you think this bottle was?
I saw the receipt.
Damn it!
Sorry.
I thought I made it a gift receipt. God damn it, Michelle. My bad. That's okay, right. So my bottle. Okay, how much do you think my bottle was compared to yours?
Oh, I mean, I'm just going to do a rough math. Currency conversion here. I would say 75, yours?
Yeah, pretty much. Mine was 73. Mm-hmm. Yours was 90 something.
Yeah, 90 something.
Which I was like, damn, $90 for Bollinger. And I'm still paying $70 for this one, which is, it's, you know, that is honestly normal. Normal baseline price for champagne is $70 US dollars.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
No. Is there a cheap champagne? Like real champagne?
Yeah. they do exist. The cheapest ones I've really only ever seen are around 35 is the cheapest I've seen US dollars, so it'd still be around 50 for you.
Are they okay?
No.
That's too bad. Because a lot of wine, like, I can get a $12 bottle of wine, and it's fine. Like, it's a good bottle of wine.
Oh, yeah. 1000%. 1000%. Well, you know what? I lie. $40 is probably the best I've had. $40. Not the best I've ever had.
Yeah.
But you could start getting good stuff around the $40 range.
Okay.
But still expensive, though.
It is still expensive. Mm-mm. Yeah. And when wine gets that expensive, you have to, like, really weigh things. Like, who is good enough to share this wine with? Will I drink the whole bottle myself? Like,
Exactly. Which is also why I'm hanging on to that one bottle of champagne I have downstairs that I absolutely love. Because my partner in crime does not like champagne.
What?
So I'm like, I know. I really have to rethink my priorities here.
I mean, at least then you get his share. So.
That's true, but I mean, I want to share it with somebody, you know?
That's true. Yeah.
So you know what's probably going to happen, Pam? When you come down from that fest, you're going to have this bottle of champagne with me because I don't have anybody to drink it with.
I'm going to have to see if I can, like, bring wine with me. I need to return some of all this wine you've gifted to me. Bring my favorite.
Oh, no. There's no such thing as returning wine gifting to Michelle. No. If anything, you're just going to get more from me. That's what's going to happen. But overall, thoughts, how do we feel about the Bollinger Special Cuvée?
I mean, it's champagne, so I love it. It's I love the intensity of the bubbles. I feel like the intensity of the taste could mellow just a notch or two for me. But overall, good. I am happy to be drinking it.
I'm also happy to be drinking it. Again, not my favorite. It's okay. A little bit too yeast-driven for me. A little bit too oaky. I'm not really necessarily an oak kind of girl, like, especially mm-hmm. like people who like don't like oaky Chardonnays and such. That's not me. So that's yeah. very much true in champagne as well. And it's okay. Is it worth the money? For me, no. Like, I can get a really great bottle for a little bit cheaper. Again, not a lot cheaper. Maybe like $10 cheaper.
Right.
Yeah, but
I'm trying to think of what else I've had. Like, I've had Veuve Clicquot before, mm-hmm. and that was pretty good. I'm not sure how much like actual real champagne I've had. Yeah, the couple
you had of Laurent Perrier.
Oh, that was really good. That was really good. The rosé you sent me, I liked that. Mm-hmm.
They also have a really good like house wine. There's like this is their the Bollinger's. This is their house wine. Like mm-hmm. Laurent Perrier has a their house wine that's also very good as well. I think I like it better than the Bollinger.
Yeah, okay.
Veuve I haven't had in years. I'd have to rehab that one because I just have not had it in so freaking long. I don't even remember. But I'm a snobby bitch who likes grower champagne. Like, again, my favorite producer of all time is Rose de Jean. Second to it is probably this Coteau de Champagne. It's I can't even pronounce it. It's fine. I'm not going to be able to pronounce it unless I have I have a poster of it in my kitchen. Like, that's how much I love it. But God help me if I can pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from Mongeau, which is near Troyes, which uses all Chardonnay. It's bone dry, like zero sugar added to it. So it's really lovely and a wonderful man, if I can remember the God help me.
What else? I think I also read about Dom P. It's always Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
Mm.
I think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're like very, very fussy, that Dom P.
They are. They're super fussy. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. So have to be particular vintages, have to be particular grapes, mm-hmm. you know. I think they age it on the lees for longer too. I don't remember. Like maybe up to 5 years. I forget. It's been a long time since I've had some Dom. Mm-hmm. I mean, those price-wise, just to give context, I guess, the bottles for Dom Perignon, at least most recent vintage, not old back vintages, because those are more expensive.
Yeah.
Most recent vintages will probably run you about $250-ish.
Oh, wow.
U.S. So it's not a cheap boy.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. And I think, again, I don't think it's worth that price. It's, mm-hmm. I mean, if you love champagne, maybe you have it once in your life kind of deal, but my favorite one that's the one sitting downstairs was $69.99.
Oh, wow.
So it's the greatest bottle of all time. And it's a quarter of the price of what Dom is. So it's,
yeah,
that's bad math.
I find that with a lot of wines, like they can get to like such a price, but the difference between a $15 bottle of wine and like $40-$50 bottle of wine, like, okay, yeah. But then if you're going from a $50 bottle of wine to a $300 bottle of wine, like,
mm-hmm. 1,000% agree. Abso-frickin-lutely. It becomes to be a threshold. Like, at what point is it worth it anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you actually paying for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to be that much more better of quality half the time. It's not, maybe they've spent more time in oak, but again, I don't like wines that are aged in a ridiculous amount of oak. So why would I want to spend more money for that? And so many, like, you know, it's like buying Gucci versus department store brand.
At that point it becomes more about the prestige and what people
mm-hmm.
think about it than like, is this actually 6 times more enjoyable than the other one? Probably not. No,
it's not. Most of the time it's not. I've had some of the most ridiculous wines in the world. Like, I've had DRC, which is Domaine Romani Conti, which is some of the most expensive wine in the world. It's mm-hmm. a Burgundy. And my favorite Burgundy wine is made from two little old ladies. And it is Domaine Romani Conti, a bottle of it will cost you $700 or $800.
Jesus.
The most recent vintage. Yeah, it's obscene. If you can get it. If you can get it, absolutely insane. Obscene. But the wine I love, Monterey Jabourg, Again, two little old ladies, you still can't get it, but their basic Burgundy Bourgogne Village wine was about $40, again, because they don't make a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
but $40 versus $800.
Yeah.
Give me that $40 one all day, every day. And it's really about, like, these two lovely old ladies are the ones making this wine. It's about the story. It's about, like, it's their family heritage. It's their... what they love, mm-hmm. you know, versus Dome Romani Conti, which is a corporate conglomerate at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I found that. I remember once I was young, but like I was still living with my parents, but I had been drinking mm-hmm. wine for a long time. And I think someone brought over like a bottle of Chateau Margaux or something. Oh, and I was just mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's good.
Fine. Yeah. It's a first growth Bordeaux. It's mm-hmm. fine. Yeah, I definitely feel that way about the expensive stuff. Like, I think it's important, not necessarily important. It's a great experience to try,
mm-hmm.
but not something I go out and try to find. What I love with wine is finding ones that are special
mm-hmm.
at a cheaper price point. You know, ones with a story, ones that have real heart and soul into them mm-hmm. and that are amazingly well made
mm-hmm.
at an affordable price.
Yeah.
Of course, affordable means very differently for particular regions. Like, affordable for champagne is going to be $50 to $60 for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I find a great champagne at $60, I am like, happy as a clam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I like finding something special to me, like my most the wine I drink the most. We actually the first episode we did Riesling, it was actually such a weird coincidence that you sent me a bottle of Cave Spring Riesling, because my favorite white wine is Cave Spring Riesling, but it's the Dolomite mm-hmm. variety specifically, and I like order from them every 2 months, and I get that, and it's just like this really good dry Riesling with like this really intense minerality to it, and it's you know, fairly local, and it's a decent price, and I'm like, I like this is better than most Chardonnays or, you know, expensive wines out there. And you just have to like find what you like. I mean, at the same token, Ontario reds are like meh. But
to be honest, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of it too is how far north you are as well. Mm. Like, it don't get that warm there. So mm-hmm. a lot of the, like, the cold constraints, like, it's much better for Riesling, which is yeah. really much better attuned to the climate there. So
mm-hmm.
stick with the Riesling for sure. Of course, you could be where I live and it's just like, I don't like Virginia wine.
Oh, no. No.
Not at all, but it's fine. So did you learn anything, Pam? I mean, I threw a lot of shit at you, to be real.
I learned a lot. I'm honestly going to have to re-listen to the episode to absorb everything. But yeah, all the... Especially, the most interesting thing, I think, is about the numbers on the bottle and whether they grow their own grapes or if it's... they don't. that was... I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't even see those numbers.
No, they're stupid tiny. Yeah. Some of them are in different placements on the label, but you have to put that on the label somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and it's just for champagne that does this as well, which I'm kind of surprised at, because you kind of just think that any bottle of wine is grown by that house, right? Like, mm-hmm. Bollinger grows their own grapes, and that's what goes into it. That's just there's a whole nother level that people don't realize with it. So mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting that they put that on the label, because so many times they refuse to put anything on the label.
Yeah, there's a lot of small print on this label.
I know, there's a lot. Yeah. Product of France, a Labrador de Bollinger I, France. So it's from I, which is a region in Champagne. I. Yeah.
But then there's this other little sticker. It says, by appointment to M.M. Queen Elizabeth II, purveyors of champagne.
Uh-huh. They're official by the queen.
All right. What does the queen have to do with France?
Well,
what queen? Oh, Elizabeth. It's not Elizabeth, but what does the English queen have to do with France? I don't know.
A lot of what French wines incorporate, and especially with their winemaking and such, is because of the English influence, because England was their biggest buyers. So champagne, French hated champagne. It wasn't until the English bought that shit up and was like, give me that. I want that. I want it drier. Give it to me drier. And that's when champagne really became popular, is because of England.
That's interesting. England seems to have, I mean, they basically colonized half the world. So, of course, they've had influence on things. But in my trivia, there was a question about IPA and where it got the name. And the name came, India Pale Ale, came from the British being in India and requiring that beer to be shipped to India. And that's why it's called India Pale Ale.
Fascinating. I was just doing research on a future episode about Crown Royale, and Crown Royale was specifically made for, was it in the like the 1960s or 50s, when they had the royal procession, the English king and queen came to Canada, and they had a whole big tour, and Crown Royale was created specifically for that tour. Which is why it's Crown Royale.
Oh, I didn't even know that was Canadian. But that's interesting. I remember it came in that felt purple bag.
Spoiler alert for future episode.
Who's the guest?
No. Well, I'll keep that a surprise. They're not Canadian.
No. So few of us are.
It's hard, I know. It's hard to buy, like, honestly, it's hard to buy stuff for people who live in Canada for me outside the U.S., but I've told you that before. I mean, it's easy for me, for you now, because I've figured out what your system is, but what it is in Toronto is very different from everywhere else. So.
Yeah. Although that liquor store that you send my stuff to now, that's a nice liquor store.
Is it?
It's huge. They got this huge vintages section. They've got, like, all this stuff. Yeah, it's a really nice liquor store.
It was actually your mom who told me about that one. Mm-hmm. Because she was like, you buy it from this one because they have the biggest selection because it's right next to the warehouse. So they get everything first. I was like, cool. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it, Sherry. Yeah.
It's a good liquor store.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you're enjoying the wine. Thank you for joining me, Pam. Please plug yourself.
I'm Pam. I have a YouTube channel. It is called Cannot Be Tamed. I talk about video games, mostly old video games, sometimes new video games. I also stream on Twitch now, which is also called Cannot. Did I even say Cannot Be Tamed the first time? I don't think I did. My Twitch and YouTube channels are called Cannot Be Tamed. I stream on Thursday nights and Sunday afternoons. I usually do a long play of a adventure game of some sort on Thursday, and then I play indie games I want to introduce people to on Thursdays. That's where you can find me.
Yes. Hang out with Pam on Sundays, because I might be there. Thursdays I try to come, but it's hard. Sundays I can make it a little bit more. At least I like having you as like background
noise. Yeah.
I'm a lurker. But they're fun. I really like what you're playing right now. What is it? The
Sanitarium.
Asylum one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sanitarium. That's freaking creepy.
It's a weird game. Yeah.
It's so strange. But yes, thank you, Pam. I so appreciate you joining me and sharing champagne with me. It's always a great time.
I'll always share wine with you. Thank you for the invite.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today, and thank you to Pam, as always, for indulging with me. It's always such a pleasure. You can find me on Twitter at PD's Power Hour, or you can email me your questions, comments, or concerns to pdspowerhour@gmail.com. And if you like what you heard here, head over to polymedianetwork.com to find more fun podcasts like Pate Tales of the Lesser Medium, Polykill, Drunk Friend, IndieQuest, all these good stuff. And if you want to help out the show, please rate and review on your preferred listening application. Just takes a minute and really helps out the show. Drink well, my friends. Bye.